You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to 90 Days Soulmate. Today we'll be talking about how and where you think. Sometimes we feel that we just always think the same, but that's not true. As many of you know, we have different ways of thinking. When we're angry, when we're happy, when we're sad, when we haven't slept enough, when we haven't had enough to eat, we have all these different ways of thinking. And today we're going to get into that. But we have something even more important to discuss. Why is this generation, this new generation, the generation, I guess it's called Gen Z, why do they have the most information in the history of the planet? They have all this info at their fingertips. They are the most connected generation in history. They can connect to their friends whenever they need. They can look something up. They can get on YouTube. They can get on Instagram. They can get on applications I haven't heard of. Who knows what they are? But the point I'm trying to make is that with all this access to information, there are downsides. One, they're the most anxious generation ever. Even those war generations, the people who came out of world wars had less anxiety than the Gen Z generation. So let's ask that question. It's not what do you think that really matters, but we're talking about today is how do you think? What is the patterns that you have, the capability you have for thinking and making decisions and having logical conversations? And where in your brain is it happening, depending on the given situation? This nuance of what's going on today, I believe, is what's changed the brain development in Gen Z. And this is something that you may or may not know, that this generation is the first generation that has gone down in scores of general intelligence. That when they are being tested for general intelligence, scores are actually lower in this generation. And every generation has slowly been going up until we got to Gen Z. Something's happened. And it might just be a small something, but it's an indication of things aren't as they used to be. I believe there's so many things going on. We're going to be talking about them today. Let's start off with something's changed, and something's changed fast. What is it? Oh, one other thing is teen depression. As we talked about anxiety, depression, it's doubled since 2009. So the CDC did a youth survey, and we talked about this a couple of shows back, where depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts are higher than ever, but they doubled between 2009 and 2019. Something's changed and something's changed fast. Tonight, we're not blaming the generation. We're blaming the systematic structure of social media, of AI, of how we're teaching the education of students, how the news is being presented, how politics are going back and forth, that the world has evolved faster than our ability to deal with it. And we're now, if we can say suffering, because anxiety, depression is suffering, we're suffering the consequences. So let's look at this. For a generation that has more information available ever before, in any time in human history, there's more media outlets, more people giving information, more influencers, more people pretending they are presenting news, more people on the internet talking about psychology. There are more people doing everything, and you have access to it at your fingertips at any moment in time. There are more conversations going on. You can have conversations with your friends. You can have conversations with your relatives. You can have conversations with people you just met online that you don't know where they're from, but you know they share your ideas, or they don't, and you want to argue with them. There are more voices competing for attention. And because of that, each voice is more emotionally charged. Meaning, for me, for our show, 90 Day Soulmate, to be listened to, we have to have good content that triggers the emotion, that pulls at the heartstrings, that helps somebody who's in need, somebody who needs help or wants to hear something. They want to hear a lesson, or they want to address a problem. They want to hear us talk about psychopaths or somebody breaking up or somebody, you know, how to build trust or how to gain empathy. It's things that are emotional in nature. It's not just, you know, putting a carburetor back in a car. But then again, if we did that, maybe we'd have people who were watching that. The algorithmic feel that we have to all the media that we connect with. So we go on the internet, go on Facebook, go on Instagram, any of these, and we look in our feed. Our feed is algorithmically produced and patterned after things that we have either spoken about, searched for when we were searching on Google or searching on a different search engine. If we're on the internet, it's tracking us, and when it's tracking us, it's then feeding back what we're interested in, whether that's angry conversation, happy conversation, conversations about relationships, conversations about depression, whatever it is, it feeds back to us what we are interested in. You could say that's great because now it makes us have to search less for stuff we're interested in. But what it avoids is the critical thinking. It avoids getting the opposite opinion. It avoids having us have to decide, is what I'm hearing the truth or just one side of the story? It feeds what we want to hear and avoids what we don't. And sometimes the biggest lesson is learning something we don't want to know. The content is dopamine driven, meaning if we feel pleasure from either getting angry and saying, aha, I told this person, now not the pleasure from being angry, but I was angry, but then I said something and I really got them. And when I really got them, one of my buddies liked what I said, and now I've got this dopamine rush. This stuff is what we're after when we are on the internet a lot of times, when we're on our phones, when we're in social media. And because of that, it is a bit addictive. Screen times go up. The more screen time, the more anxious, the more depressed. Those have been studies as well. We're not going to reference them right now. And then these emotional reinforcement loops. So what happens is that the more emotionally I get involved in something I'm researching, whether it has to be something on a relationship and I'm really into it and I really want to find out something because I really want help, and so I'm emotionally driven for that content, the more I get of it, if it builds, it can be building and building those areas in my brain that are interested in it, but it can also be giving me a little dopamine rush, a little rush of feeling good about what I'm doing. And then you get that loop and that feedback and that loop and that feedback, and then you get stuck on the phone, or you're just watching these little short videos on Instagram or YouTube or TikTok or somewhere. You're watching these little videos and you know, I want to see another cat video. I want to see cat playing the piano. That we get caught up in these loops of emotionally driven searching. Or we're just bored and we're so connected that you put the phone down and you feel like your friend's gone. You feel disconnected. That is happening a lot in society today, whether you're young or old. It's not just a problem of youth. But they're called scroll traps, when you're trapped in scrolling because it keeps feeding you the information that you're interested in, so you keep watching, you keep building those areas of your brain that like watching that thing that you're watching, and then you can't get enough. Home remodeling, oh, and keep looking at fireplaces. Now I've got like 500 videos on fireplaces that feed into my Instagram feed, one after the other after the other. I'm like, wait a minute. How does it know I'm interested in fireplaces? Because I spend time on the video when I'm watching it. And then when it sees that I'm doing that, the algorithm says, oh, Jim likes fireplaces. Let me send him more. Finally, these are self-satisfying information diets. So we're eating up what this algorithm is serving us. People consume what they already agree with, or they also seek out arguments because they're looking to have an argument. They're looking to get their anger out and, you know, do a gotcha or something, or just disruptive. But more people are looking for things they agree with because they want to be able to be in a group. They want to be connected. They want to be part of a larger group. Finally, emotional stimulation over intellectual challenge. If you have a choice of emotional stimulation or intellectual challenge, many people will choose the emotional stimulation. That's what AI, that's what algorithms, well, AI doesn't really care about what we think, so let's forget AI. But algorithms, they're looking to feed us with the emotionally satisfying content that keeps us connected, that keeps us watching, and keeps us on whatever that is, so we see the ad, so we go through it, so they get revenue, because they make revenue when we watch the media, plus all these things that we scroll through. Well, you all know it, so we're going to get back to this when we return on 90 Day Soulmate.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. Do you know that the average screen time for teens today has approached and surpassed 7 hours? It's never been higher. And we talked about this many shows ago. 3 or more hours a day have given people, have reportedly turned into people reporting that those who spend 3 hours or more a day, I'm going to try to get the statistic right here, have a 60% chance of saying that they are anxious or have depression. And that if now the average is 7 hours a day of recreational screen time, that just blows my mind. 7 hours. So if you're at school for 6 hours and screen time for 7, that's 13. You got 11 hours left in the day, 3 hours of eating, you've got 8 hours of sleep, that's it. School, sleep, screen time. That's crazy. Our brains are trained for stimulation and not for reasoning. And that's showing us what's going on. We've got to cut the screen time. So that's not communication, by the way, when we're on that screen for 7 hours. That's conditioning. We're being conditioned to stay on the screen. We're getting what we want, and therefore we want more. And it's easy. We all just get on our phones, and I say we all, but you may not, I may not, but generally speaking, how many times have you been driving down the road and there's somebody walking across a crosswalk while watching their phone? We were leaving a parking garage early today, And there was a woman walking out up the ramp of the parking garage, just looking at her phone at the exit, not paying any attention to the cars coming down or going up. It blew my mind, but that just seems to be everyday thing. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised anymore. Maybe I should start doing it. Don't actually look at the ground in front of you, but just look at your phone as you walk off the cliff, whatever it is. So when did this all actually start? When did this change, this generational breakdown start? Is it now? Was it 12 years ago? Was it 20 years ago? Well, let's look at the baby boomers. The baby boomers had an analog childhood. There wasn't any digital. I remember growing up in the 80s, and computers were just coming out. You know, we're just starting to get introduced. Hey, Jim, here's a computer. Hey, computer, here's Jim. We got introduced to each other. We were like, oh, this is pretty cool. It can do like one thing, but you got to program it. You had to go in and write the programs that logically told the computer what to do and created little games and stuff. So you were interacting with the computer and you were in charge of creating the programs that told it what you wanted to do. I remember teaming up with a whole bunch of kids in electronics class, and we were adding lines, like thousands of lines in there for this Star Trek game. And it was an MS-DOS or a DOS program. So it was like 10, do this for I equals 1 to 100. But you would put these lines in one after another after another, and you would see the inner working of the game and how it worked. And you learned that by doing this programming for this game, that you could use this program to do different things, that you could write programs that did things and helped you with your work. So you were logically thinking of how I can make my life easier by learning something new. So we had to learn the language of the computer to have it help us. But in doing that, we learned a more complicated thing than what we had before. But then it could do it faster. So by doing the upfront work of learning how to program the computer, which was complicated, it then could give us speed in the future. So we were trading time and complexity now for speed in the future. And that was intellectually stimulating, and then save time in the future. Of course, when you played the Star Trek game, it would take time away from your day. But since it was a slow game on the computer, it was kind of boring, but it was, you know, it was the fun thing you had at the time, other than go outside and play Red Rover or play football or have a baseball game with your friends, maybe play some tag. We had delayed information. You didn't have instant information. In fact, many newspapers, and you might have heard of newspapers, these were these things that were printed on paper and sent out, or magazines and things. You heard about the news after it happened. You heard about it the next day. You didn't hear about it instantly. There weren't drones flying overhead. There weren't all these citizen news reporters who were out there immediately posting on YouTube or on the internet what was going on. We had to learn how to do independent research to understand things. Okay, you had to look at periodicals, you had to look at references, you had to look at reports and studies, and you had to figure out what's true, what's not true. But the amount of information, it wasn't a lot. It wasn't what's out there today. The problem with the information today is discernment. Discerning what is true, what's misinformation, what coincides with something else, what butts heads with something else. Is that piece, if it's still done, today's information can be very useful, as long as you have learned how to understand what's true, what's not. A peer-reviewed study is better than just a study. A study is better than just somebody talking about something on the internet. And all that's better than some AI program pretending to do something that's not true at all. And there's so many things that are being passed off as real information that's just made up entirely, like Tai Chi workouts or whatever these things are. Millennials, they had early internet. They were introduced to social media later on. They weren't getting it immediately when they were younger. They were still trained in long-form education, you know, handwriting out letters, writing essays, doing things where they had to interact with the teacher. They had to do things face-to-face. And again, they had to do their research in order to put things together. But they may have had computers in order to write their term paper. They may have had the aid of a word processor. Very simple programs. The Gen Z were the first people with full smartphone adolescence. They were raised by an algorithm. Their identity was shaped online, and the pandemic isolation impacted them greatly. This was all happening during early brain development. So many of these children who grew up, they grew up through this age. Again, smartphone adolescence, algorithm-raised patterns, meaning patterns of finding information, patterns of interacting with social media through algorithms. Their identity was shaped through their online presence, as well as how they interacted with their friends, as well as people they didn't know. And they had this vast ability to interact with people across the globe who either agreed or disagreed, or just whatever they were interested in. So this unfettered ability to go anywhere, anytime, any place, and do whatever you want to find information that made you feel emotionally stimulated was how they grew up. And it took individual differences to make people individually different, right? So some people got lost in that, and other people said, you know what, yeah, I can do this, but you know, I want to be with friends, I want to go play sports, I want to be involved at school. There's other things that people still were trying to balance in their life. Again, though, let's go to the pandemic. Being out of school for maybe a year, not being in the classroom, learning remotely impacted children. It turned out that remote learning was one of the things that had impact on the development of the brain and the ability to learn the way that people used to learn, that more challenging in person, that for whatever reason, humans teaching humans turned out to be a pretty good thing. Being in front of the classroom with a teacher, maybe your attention was stronger, especially since you didn't have other things. You couldn't sit there when you didn't have a cell phone, because years ago people didn't. You're in class. You're either in class or you're goofing off and they throw you out of class. Today, I don't know. Are you on your phone? Can you be on your phone? Are you just waiting to get on your phone after the class is over? That it was the first generation raised inside the attention economy. The attention economy is where marketers, where the media, where influencers, where they are trying to get your attention. Search engines are trying to keep your attention. The attention economy is people make money by keeping your attention. People make money by keeping your attention. That's the attention economy. This is where Gen Z grew up. If I could grab your attention, have you continue to watch this show, listen to my YouTube channel, listen to this TV personality, that thoughts, mind, brains were shaped by this attention-seeking, algorithmic environment. Let's talk about what this environment actually does to the developing brain. First, there's a lot of misinformation that floods the brain, right? So there's bots, there's AI-generated narratives that may or may not be true, they may or may not be based on fact. There are foreign influence in campaigns to hurt. Yes, there are international enemies that want people in the United States or people in Spain or people in Canada to argue with each other. They're there to sow the seeds of discontent. They're there to get people to be upset at each other. They're there to want the people of the nation to try to overthrow the government. There are all these things going on. And, some of them might be, internally your own country doing it to yourself too. Who knows? We don't know about these things. But finally, not but, but finally, there's the reinforcing of your self-beliefs, meaning the beliefs you already have are being reinforced. As you seek out additional information that already is based upon what you know, it satisfies your emotions and it builds your brain and your thought patterns in those areas. And because we have access to more and more and more and more information everywhere, we can get more and more information on stuff we already know, which drowns out the ability to listen to things we don't know that we would have been able to weigh against what we do know to see, maybe if I logically think about this in my prefrontal cortex that hasn't been shut down because of all this emotional stimulation, I could weigh these things out and then have better judgment. We can't have better judgment if we are seeking out only what we already believe. Whew, that's a tough one. I hope that meant something to someone out there. Seek out what you don't believe, learn about it, learn why the other person believes that, and then see if there's an ounce of truth in it. And if there is, start weighing your options, start weighing the credibility of what you already believe, and say, well, maybe it strengthens what you already believe, or maybe it moderates it. But you have to be able to observe what your biases are and understand that you may have a preference for something that you may have to put to the side in order to take some information in that may not be as satisfying, but in order to research it and understand, does it match or not match with your pre-existing beliefs? And does it open up your mind, or does it make your mind more concrete in what you already believed because you now took a look at the opposite viewpoint and said, you know what? What I thought before is even makes more sense after looking into it. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Gen Z and the problem of being raised in this information overload age.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Once upon a time, there was a couple and a newborn baby. Or should I say, a single mum. This brave young lady left her 9-to-5 job to follow her passion and started a consulting business. Her friends helped out. She traveled the world, met new people, and again came home. The woman dated to find a man who would fill her life and fit her plan. She met a guy who checked out ladies. That burned her up. That made her crazy. Other guys were full of verve. Into their self, no room for her. And one time she met a man with patch over eye and axe in hand. Then one day she had enough. Her little boy was all grown up. Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate. Today we're talking about Gen Z. We're talking about the problem of information overload and how it has stunted and helped to stunt one of the problems of the intellectual capability of our new generations by limiting the struggle to weigh information, have to seek out information, have to think about information, having it just spoon-fed to us, and then having tools that can process information for us where we're basically just saying, hey, do this for me, and it does it. It looks at the information, processes it, and presents it, and then presents it as, oh, that sounds pretty good. But we didn't do the work. Answers that are immediately available prevent us from struggling. Struggle builds neurons. when we have to struggle to figure something out, it, you know, it's basically a crossing a gap. Just think about like a gap. You're walking and there's like a gap and then there's more land and you got to jump that gap. You got to jump over it. That struggling causes our brain to have to cross that gap, and it creates synapses and builds neurons, and it strengthens our brain by having to struggle. Struggle builds neurons. I can't repeat that enough. The harder we work at trying to do something, the stronger our brain gets around that, as long as we're making progress. And I'm not saying that if you make no progress, your brain's growing. It's basically growing in all the ways you don't make progress. But you need to make progress, learn things, and as you close that gap, as you cross that gap, you have strength in your brain. If you don't have that struggle, you're not going to build that brain capacity in the area that you want. Knowledge or capacity for thinking, or ability for thinking deeply and be self-observant about what you are thinking. Learning time displaced. What does that mean? Social media hours have replaced reading. We used to have to read a certain amount of chapters, you know, or books or whatever. And even now, I was taking classes last year, and we had, you know, for next week, you had to read 100 pages of a textbook, the reference book for your class. And you had to take notes and you had to go through it. And oh my gosh, it was such a pain in the neck. But you know what happened? I learned something. I could have just said to AI, hey, I'm writing something on work psychology and the different motivational programs that you can give to an organization to help employees, write something for me. Or I could read the chapter on it, take notes, come up with some ideas myself, write something, and then maybe use AI to help make my paper read smoother. You know, hey, can you check my references? Is this right? Like, you can use AI as a tool, but not use AI as doing it all. So AI as a tool, and knowing what you're asking it, and knowing what your own opinion is, and knowing what your own thoughts are, AI can then strengthen what you're doing without taking away the ability for you to learn something. News is optimized for outrage, right? So if the news isn't bad, if the news isn't terrible, if the news isn't yelling at one politician or investigating some terrible thing that happened or talking about a fire, if it's not talking about a car crash, if it's just like, hey, it was really a wonderful day today, the sky was beautifully bright and it was warm, it wasn't too cold, it wasn't too hot, we didn't have a snowstorm, we didn't have a 103 degree temperature, if there was no extreme in weather, no extreme in news, if there wasn't something about your baseball team that you love, if there wasn't some politician who got caught with their hand in the cookie jar, that outrage not there, people don't tune in to the news at 10. So it's optimized, and our news feeds are too. If you look at your feed on when you're doing a Google search on something, or if you go to CNN or you go to ABC or Fox or whatever, and you look at their news feed, there are always these hard-hitting stories that are going to pull at you emotionally to click on them to keep you on their website. Politics are optimized for fear. The fear of, oh, immigrants, or fear of taxes, or fear of losing rights, or that if politics don't emotionally move you, people aren't motivated to do something about it. They're not motivated to show up and vote. They're not motivated to give a contribution. That the emotional outrage of politics is there strictly to get you to vote for them. And also, I believe it's strictly to make you worry about the outrage and not see what they're actually doing behind the scenes. We'll leave that to another show. Marketing is optimized for insecurity. Oh, you don't smell good, so you need this body odor control. Oh, you need this new shirt to make yourself look better. You know, oh, this beer is worth drinking, because if you drink it, they're going to be looking at you drinking that beer, and they're going to say, "Ooh, he's high up on the he's highfalutin." And by the way, highfalutin, if you don't know what that means, it's an old story about riverboats with big flues where they would burn, I guess it was coal, they were coal-burning riverboats, and if the riverboat had a high flue, it was where the wealthy people were, because that high flue had a lot of power, and it could push them around the river on that riverboat. Highfalutin. Any case, when you drank that beer, you were highfalutin. You were on the casino boat with the rich people. So marketing optimized for insecurity. Emotion sells, logic doesn't. Logic we use after we emotionally commit a lot of times. And I heard this many years ago, I've been in sales for so many years, is that the emotion of the situation gets us to move. But then we need logic to back it up in order to explain it to other people of why we made the decision. We can't tell them, "I just made that decision because that car looks hot." It's got to be, "Well, you know what gets good gas mileage, a time in my life where I want to enjoy the road a little bit, and it made sense that if I'm going to make this kind of investment, I need to enjoy myself," or whatever it is that we start off with an emotional decision many times and then followed up with the logic in order to excuse it to our friends and family, except some of our friends who understand why we did it, right? How about this? Phone a friend. We can now, when someone asks us a question, instead of having to think about it and try to find an answer within our own head, and we could just go right to our phone, right? We go to our phone and we look it up. And so now the phone is the phone a friend. If you remember Who Wants to Be a Millionaire or something like that, I believe that was the name of the show, they would ask questions and you had the opportunity to phone a friend. And you would phone a friend who may know something that you don't know. Well, now our phones know everything, so we don't actually have to retain information. We can selectively retain information, and there is a psychological phenomenon that our brains will actually get rid of and disperse information we no longer need. If we don't have to struggle to get back to that information in our brain, but we're just looking it up on the phone, our brain says, "Well, I don't need to keep it," and gets rid of it. It's basically synapse pruning. Our synapses are pruned in our brain if we don't use the information. And part of keeping our brain strong is to struggle to remember, struggle. You know, when they tell you as you age, you should be doing crossword puzzles, you should be doing logic puzzles, you should be playing games with friends, you should go out and move, you should dance, you should do things that push your brain, that cause you to have struggles and challenges, because that keeps your brain strong. If you activate those neurons and synapses in the brain, in those areas, they'll continue to try to keep active, stay strong, and grow, because we do have new neuroplasticity. In youth, if we learn something and then we just decide, you know what, in the future, I'm just going to keep looking it up. I'm just going to talk into my phone and say, "Hey, what is the square root of 38? And then it gives me the answer, and I don't have to think about, "Oh, you know, well, 36 is 6, so it's a little bit more than 6, so I'm going to say 6.2. I'm going to approximate. Why? Because it sounds logical. You know, if you don't have to think about it because something is providing you the answer, then your brain isn't going to bother to retain the structure that allows you to think about it. We will lose that ability. And that's one of the things that they think could be happening with today's generation. We don't use it, so we lose it. It's called cognitive offloading. I like to call it synaptic pruning, which is cognitive offloading. The brain doesn't need to do it anymore, so it just gets rid of that ability. That storage area is wiped clean. It's basically saving that space for something that's necessary, like more information on cat videos. What other things the media is causing us to do. we have a very short attention span, right? So we need new things in our brain every 6 seconds. That if it's not new, every 6 seconds. If the video is longer than 30 seconds, I don't want to watch it anymore. I don't want to watch a 40-minute program on psychology. I want those sound bites. So, you know, I try to put out a couple of sound bites every week, just a, you know, 30 to 90 second sound bite part of this show. Why? Because people may be interested in a 30 to 60 second soundbite of part of the show of something important, but they don't want to listen to the whole show, because while they're listening to the show, their brain's going, you're missing 300 other things you could be doing at the same time. And you know, oh, I'll get on my phone and I'll just move to something else right now. So we need sustained focus. That's something we need, but something we avoid now. We avoid having to sit down and read for an hour. We avoid having to watch one documentary for an hour. And I'm the same way. When I want to find information, sometimes if the video starts off and it's a documentary and I'm listening to it or watching it, or if I get a book and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so long, it is difficult. Or you get, I do a lot of reading of studies, and when you look at a study and start reading the study, you really want to go to the abstract because you want to know what the study is about, you want to know what they found, you want to know just a general idea of what this is about. Then you want to go to the discussion, you want to get through the study, and these studies, some of them are, you know, 20 page long on something, and I just want the heart of this study. But you know what? Struggling through, you may hear, see, or read something that triggers a new idea, a new perspective that you would have never had if somebody just gave you the summary. So the struggle, the sustained focus, builds your brain. Studies show a measurable decline in sustained attention performance in digital-heavy populations. Ooh. So digital-heavy populations, people who spend a lot of time in the digital media, lose the ability for sustained focus. Social validation provides dopamine, and so likes provide dopamine. On social media, it gives you, you know, when you post a video and says, I like it, it makes you happy. If you make a comment and one of your friends says, yeah, that's great, makes you happy. So social media gives us, you know, basically a pleasure. It's like we seek that out. And it's very easy. We'd rather seek out a like and somebody who responded to a post we made. We'd rather seek that out than spend an hour reading something about a new subject, you know, that we are spending a lot more time seeking out these likes and trying to get these dopamine drips than we do learning new things. The challenge, again, challenge our brain. It will build the brain. It will build the synapses. It will build the neurons. It will make our brain stronger. Don't challenge our brain. We don't use it. We lose it. Identity has become externalized. For many of us, for many of our children, for many of society, is that we are so connected, again, 7 hours a day of screen time for today's teens, 7 hours, that they're so connected on that screen. A lot of that is just checking out different things, but a lot of it is communicating with their friends, and their identity is connected. We were talking about, you know, the five senses, the six senses, the seven senses, and frankly, there's an eighth sense. You can say there's thousands of senses, but let's go to the eighth one, being the digital sense. Our connection to the world through our digital resources, through our phones, through our computers, through our screens, is that connection to the world is now how we sense the world. It's not, yes, and we sense that screen through our eyes, through our fingers and all that, but if we put that phone away, that is cut off, that connection. And you can see how people react when they don't have the ability to be on their phone. Very difficult. When we come back, we'll finish up with Gen Z and the problem of the digital age.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Thanks for tuning in to 90 Days Soulmate. We're going to finish this up with this. This show was called How We Think and Where We Think. So the where we think is we can be thinking in our prefrontal cortex. We can be thinking, what do I say next? What is all the stuff that I've been reading about? What is this show about? And how do I concisely put it in a way that makes it really understandable? And that makes me have to think on the fly, you know, extemporaneously thinking or speaking about this show. And the show is how and where. The where can be from your reptilian brain through your mammalian brain to your prefrontal cortex or your neocortex or your human brain. The where is moderated by our emotion. Our emotion is moderated by just how we're feeling. It can be moderated by our beliefs. Our beliefs can be moderated by how much time and effort we've put into the same feeding of the social media diet. You know, we're eating this diet of things that we already believe in, and now we're so emotionally charged about them that it stops us from being able to think. So the where in our brain are we thinking? Are we thinking logically? Are we thinking, again, how do we connect what I'm trying to say to you? And how does that interaction play out logically rather than emotionally? Are we too caught up on what we think and our biases that it holds us back? It makes us emotional about what we're saying. And because we're emotional or too emotional, we're now in our mammalian brain, in the limbic system, in the emotional part of our thinking. And that if we have too much emotion, it kind of shuts off our ability to really logically think. So where in our brain are we thinking? Can we bring down the rhetoric? Can we bring down our anger? Can we bring down our addiction to social media to a point where we can start to logically think again? Struggle without emotionally feeling anxious and emotionally feeling depressed is struggling to think to build our brain logically. That's where are we thinking? We want to think in our prefrontal cortex, in the front of our brain where our logic is, in order to then prompt ourselves to build more of that capacity and ability. That's again, where in our brain. Part of that is how we think too, is that we are limited to how we think by our patterns that we've learned from our parents, our, you know, what came from us, from our biology, how we were born, how we spent time with our friends, what we've done over our life, what kind of education we have, what kind of study, what kind of struggle. That has changed how we think. Meaning, do we think logically normally anyway? Do we think with an engineer brain? Do we try to really, you know, are we concrete, black and white, or is there a lot of gray in our life? That the how we think is more like our capacity in our patterns of thinking, no matter where in the brain we are, but it's also moderated to where in the brain. So we've got this way we think, you know, is it logical? Is it concrete? Is it black and white versus gray? How is that? Are we, you know, or are we creative thinkers? And so you have this like personality-based thinking, but it's also moderated by where are we in the brain at the time we're doing the thinking. If we are on social media, if we're angry, if we're emotional, we're going to limit the amount of time we're in our prefrontal cortex. We're going to limit the amount of time we're struggling to learn new information, to learn new patterns, to learn new information that builds our synapses, that keep our brain strong, that keeps us cognizant of what's going on in the world around us, and hopefully help us define a better future, not only for ourselves, but for the rest of society and the world. Thank you for tuning in to 90 Day Soulmate. Have a great week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.